Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Season 14, Episode 1 of the Seen From Above podcast, which aims to showcase the latest and greatest in remote sensing and geoscience while keeping, of course, inclusivity at the forefront. This season of the Seen From Above is brought to you by Geo Handsomeness, and I'm very excited about this new season because there's a lot of things going on in the world, of course, in different observation. And also, there are a lot of news coming to this podcast, or better, with new members. And we will have episodes to talk about the hot topics in our field and with the best guest, of course. But let me first introduce to you to the new two members, and we will start with Michele.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michele Piccoli. I'm a remote sensing scientist. Well, my work involves activities related to land use dynamics, spatial temporal data analysis, and the big earth observation data to address challenges related to land use change and the environmental impacts. My current activities are based on monitoring degradation, regeneration, and agroforestry systems. And besides my work, I'm involved in activities related to human rights and inclusion.
I'm Dr. Yasmin Mendes. I'm a remote sensing scientist as well, and most of my work have been on tropical ecosystems. I also come from different backgrounds, working from sectors from the government level to academia and private sector. My recent activities now are focusing on climate and security risk assessments. I'm also involved in activities related to diversity, equality, inclusion, and justice. And in my free time, I usually enjoy reading or having a good glass of wine. Well, to get to this first episode, let's start with some news with Rafa.
Hi, everyone. I hope you all are doing great. I am so happy to be here for one more season with all of you. So let's go to the news. So let's start with exciting news. The cloud-based remote sensing with Google Earth Engine has officially been published. This book is a collaborative effort featuring 55 chapters contributed by over 100 authors from the community, and it's the first book dedicated to Google Earth Engine. They've organized the book in a way that makes it super easy for users of all experience levels to dive right in and find the information they need. And the best part, it's open access, so feel free to explore and get inspired. The link is in the description of this episode. Happy reading to you all. ESA delays Vega C return to flight to late 2024. The European Space Agency concluded a rocket motor nozzle needs to be redesigned. We hope the Sentinel-1C will continue very soon the critical task of delivering key radar imagery for a wide range of services, applications, and science. The Landsat 9 satellite hit a milestone of 10,000 orbits around the Earth. Since its launch in 2021, the satellite has added over 475,000 scenes. The Landsat missions has had a significant impact by providing invaluable Earth observation data for over 5 decades. These data are helping to monitor environmental change, land use, and resource management, and contributing to scientific research and disaster management. It was and still is a game-changer. With 7,000 wildfires in September, Amazonas has its worst month of fires this year. Marina Silva, Brazil's Minister of the Environment, asserts that deforestation is the primary driver of these fires, and there is no natural fire in the Amazon. The fires are either intentionally set by criminals or the result of transforming the vegetation cover for a specific purpose, followed by ignition fire. Marina further states that this is an extremely serious situation due to the convergence of 3 factors. 1. A severe drought caused by El Niño. 2. A significant amount of dried organic matter. And 3. The deliberate ignition of fires on private properties and within public areas for criminal purposes. The governor of the state of Amazonas, Wilson Lima, declared a state of environmental emergency, and the civil defense predicts a record drought this year. And that's all for now. You can find this and much more in my newsletter. The link is in the description of this episode. A good episode to everyone, and see you in the next one. Bye!
Yeah, so after all this news, I think we all have this concerning about what's happening in the Amazon at the moment. And of course, with the current El Nino event, things exacerbate a little bit. But stay tuned also to the podcast, because we're definitely going to have an episode on the subject.
So, and today's topic is the new regulation of the European Union Deforestation Free, or what we everyone is calling the new EUDR. So in June of this year, the European Union finally published the new EUDR. This regulation aims to ensure that the products traded and also consumed in the Europe do not contribute to any deforestation or forest degradation. This regulation will mainly affect operators and traders in seven different commodities: soy, beef, palm oil, wood, cocoa, coffee, and rubber. And every operator and trader has to do due diligence first, following the Articles 9 and 2, for example, to collect precise geolocation of farmland with the commodities, and also provide proof that their products and manufacturing facilities are completely deforestation-free, and in accordance with legality, of course. They also need to do, as a second step, a risk assessment following the Article 10, such as having information if their crops are in indigenous areas or if there is any risk of deforestation and degradation around the area. So after these two processes, if they find out that they are certain of compliance, then they can place their products into the market. If they are not sure and think that there is a risk of non-compliance, then they need to carry out a risk mitigation obligation, such as, for example, independent audition. And to help us better understand the opportunities and challenges of each one of the points of the regulation, we have today an EUDR expert with us, Dr. Vivian Ribeiro.
Welcome, Vivian. So just to present her a little bit, Dr. Vivian Ribeiro is a senior data scientist at the Stockholm Environmental Institute, and she currently leads the spatial intelligence team in the TRACE, Intelligence for Sustainable Trade Initiative. You probably heard about it. She is also the co-founder and technical coordinator of the Do Pasto ao Prato app, a collaborative initiative aimed at increasing transparency in the Brazilian meat industry. Vivian holds degrees in biology from the University of Goiás in Brazil and a master's and a PhD in ecology from the University of Brasilia. I think it's a pleasure to have you here today, Vivian, so please.
Pleasure is all mine. I'm very excited to be here talking about the EUDR. It's such a new and exciting things in this world of commodity supply chains. I wouldn't really frame myself as an expert, but I think we are all in the same world trying to understand the implications and implementations and challenges. So it's going to be quite an interesting conversation today. Thank you very much for having me here.
Yeah, we are all very excited, Vivian. This regulation, it's pretty long. There are a lot of requirements, and we are very happy to really understand the challenges and opportunities for Earth observation sector, right, in this regulation. But so then let's start with the first part of the due diligence process that we just talked about, which is locating the fields and also confirming that there has been no deforestation or degradation in that field where the commodities are located. Let's take an example of soya, because I know that you're very expert in soybean in Brazil. So what do you think that are the geospatial solutions that can be used in this part? And what do you think that are the challenges outside also of geospatial context?
I think I would like to start just acknowledging how amazing is that we're discussing about this new regulation, right? It's such an exciting thing to see how really the world is progressing towards asking for deforestation-free products. I think soy is a great example for us to start with, especially because Brazil already showed a lot of improvements on this direction with the soy moratorium. So we're not really talking about the first time that a specific association between deforestation and soy plantations that are happening in the world. However, One of the criticisms that we had before around the soy moratorium was that it was specifically about one commodity in one place. And now we're talking about the whole market. So with all the progress we had identifying where the soy is located, I think the biggest challenge that we face nowadays is not in countries rich with data like Brazil, but also in other places like Bolivia, Paraguay, and Argentina, that is showing a lot of expansion of soy fields, and in some places like Bolivia, it's quite concerning, the increase of deforestation for this commodity. So if I can point one challenge that we're facing nowadays is that we are in 2023, and it's still a lot of countries, they don't have monitoring systems for deforestation that we can trust, that we can rely, and we can also kind of like use as a reference to understand this dynamic in the world. So it sounds quite basic, but it's a huge blind spot.
Exactly, Vivian. That's what you said. Some countries like Brazil, so we are very fortunate that we have such a great monitoring system like PRODES, but there's a lot of challenging around, of course, other countries that do not have this infrastructure that we have there. And so how do you think that Earth Observation can support the location of this field? So when we think about getting the GPS location from the field, and the boundary, like mapping the boundaries of these fields, for example?
I think that's a great question for us to also see how this world on geospatial data is evolving really fast, right? So now we're able to really see inside properties. And again, we can make a reference in Brazil, and the car registry that provides us the location of the farms really allows us to understand not only where this deforestation is going, how this overlaps with the commodity expansion, but also what is the structure of these plantations, right? Is this located in small farms? Is this located in medium and big farms? So those are the questions that nowadays are really helping us understanding the expansion of this sector inside producing countries. So there are a lot of possibilities nowadays to understand how we can really create robust strategies to reduce deforestation. And the UDR is really surfing this wave right now, you know, understanding and making the most of the data that we are providing from the geospatial background to really demand free and zero deforestation, free deforestation supply chains, but also all the discussions on legality. You mentioned about the indigenous lands, and this is another great application of geospatial data. We can really see those boundaries. We can see if this is happening inside. I think beef is a great example. So the production of beef inside places that are actually overlapping with indigenous lands, but they are not really made by this population, that by traditional population or indigenous populations in this land, is a great example of how we still need to use more and more of these tools and this data to understand how we can support, protect people, and also make a really good and a way better supply chain.
Yeah, that's great. Actually, this is a part of the risk assessment, right? Where they have to really analyze the legality and also the presence of indigenous community in the land and also other kind of information. But Vivian, I think I just remember a very nice conversation that we had outside of the podcast. You were saying like that there is a way that you can get an information from the identity registry of a company. And how are you connecting this information to be sure that your soybean or your coffee is being sourced from exactly this field that they gave you, for example, the location using the GPS points?
I think you're touching a great point on commodity traceability and all the challenges that we face really understanding from where the commodities are coming from. Of course, transparency and traceability, they are not the same thing, but one thing can definitely support the other. What we do in trace and trying to put pieces of this puzzle together to understand those dynamics. So what you're mentioning from this conversation we had is really how we can trace the commodity supply chains, and giving again the example of soy, what we can do is understanding, for example, from tax data, if this facility, for example, a silo, is owned by a company that is also exporting to the European market, but also to other markets as well. We can also understand if a specific, for example, farms are producing soy, and probably if they belong to the same owner, they are probably supplying themselves. Of course, those decisions and trying to interpret the operations of this supply chain is quite complicated also, because we need to understand that companies will operate in different ways. But having more information available and accessible is a great way for us to understand a little bit more what we know about traceability and what are the challenges those operators will face, trying to not understand the direct suppliers, but a great discussion on challenges comes from the indirect suppliers, which is a very present and strong actor in those supply chains of the commodities that you mentioned in the UDR.
Wow, that's so interesting. And it's such a big challenge. And I think this will create the whole opportunity for the geospatial market as well, right? So just to add this comment, and once this risk assessment is realized and all this work that you guys are doing, and then also operator and trades, we need to carry out the risk mitigation obligation as well. So
Vivia, we know that there are countries like Brazil that you already said have excellent monitoring systems like Prodis, but most of the countries don't have, as you cited. How you think that satellite image can contribute to a fair categorization of the countries? Because we know that the context of Brazil, some areas deforested a lot, some areas don't.
I love to start thinking on how very simple and apparently straightforward concepts are so difficult to really put in practice from the geospatial perspective. So for example, in the UDR, we have the FAO definition of forest, right? When you're talking about different and very, like, completely different vegetations will behave, considering this type of categorization, Brazil, but also the Chaco in South America will present you a lot of different challenges, because they will not necessarily obey to this type of requirements or definitions of forests presented by the FAO. So this touches us, the forest, this presents us the very basic challenge on how we're going to identify this risk, where is this located, and also the possibilities that countries, producing countries, they will not talk the same as the global categorizations of forest we'll see. So if you understand, for example, you mentioned Prodis multiple times, it's a very popular but also very reliable data source or interpretation of deforestation monitoring system in Brazil. The interpretation of deforestation there won't necessarily match directly what we have, for example, tree cover loss, it's the type of data set that very often we refer. This type of thing presents challenge also in how the countries will feel that they are represented in their legislation, right? So if you consider monitoring systems that are running for such a long time, and we mentioned the soil moratorium in Prodis, this is one of the proxy for the interpretation of compliance with this private commitment. It's a type of thing that is not going to align directly with the FAO definition. So how we can really make sure that we're going to continue to make progress instead of just creating more noise. So one of the interesting things that I think is, like, we should all be very positive about this, the implementation of the UDR, understanding that challenges will be presented in very simple aspects, like, what is a forest? How can we really define that this place is deforestation according to the concerns of the UDR if the country is presenting deforestation in a different way? So yeah, it's very interesting how challenges are presented in very straightforward definitions. And when we try to map it, it's completely different.
Wow, I love this, because it's always on the basic conceptualization of things that the trick happens, right? And then bringing on the topic as well about some of the reactions on the UDR, we know that there was some negative reactions from countries that have commodities as one of their main economic drivers. So they basically depending on these commodities for their economic, right, system. And we have seen some public seminars and other events, countries, and mentioning Brazil again as an example, that the regulation can be viewed as a unilateral decision. And that in this sense, it would greatly affect small farmers who may be excluded from this supply chain of large companies. The legislation is there already, right? So it will apply from December of 2024. What would be the best way to deal with this situation in your view? And how, of course, governments would support the small-scale agriculture in their own countries to not be like suffering backlash as well from the legislation?
First, I would like to just start saying that I do understand the reactions So it's kind of like we are partners, we're trading partners for such a long time. And suddenly it's not really suddenly, but I changed the rules without a very extensive consultation. I do not expect that such a progress implementation of zero deforestation, something that is quite innovative and very brave from the European Commission, won't create noises. So I cannot just say that this is completely unexpected. That would be very naive for me to say, but I do understand the reactions. It is expected from Europe to help and support those countries to comply with this new regulation. So this is the thing that we really need to highlight and make sure that especially those commodities that are more related to smallholders, for example, cocoa in Africa, is the type of thing that we are expecting Europe to support, that this compliance can be achieved and people won't be excluded from the market because of that. Cocoa is a great example because you have most of the commodity sourced from Africa, and Europe is the main buyer in this supply chain. And in this case, it is extremely important for us to see support, technical support, really showing not only where is the forest in December 31st, 2020, but also where are the cocoa located. So, of course, operators will have to do their due diligences, but we also expect Europe to support those governments improving accessibility on information, improving technology, and really being able to support them to reach this compliance required by the law.
There is something extremely difficult, which is to differentiate, for example, what is a commodity tree, I don't know, coffee, rubber, or planted forest with natural forests. Or sometimes when they are into agroforest systems, right? Sometimes a person just do a normal harvest, but depending on the system of the alert system that you are using, they identify this as a degradation or deforestation, but it's not. Actually, it's just a harvesting.
Yeah, I think also, as Vivian mentioned, there will be, of course, some discussions about the legislation. I think it's good to have this kind of discussions because then it can also be improved in the near future and to have a fair application of the legislation. That is really important as well. Because, of course, the larger commodities, they have the money to basically, like, something is wrong, they may pay the fees and that's it. But the small scale will suffer much more from the legislation.
Well, and talk a little bit more about challenges. I think something that we should keep watching very closely is the concept of leakage, which is actually quite a broad concept, right? We're not only talking about what can happen from one vegetation to the other, which gives us a lot of space for conversations because of the inclusion of other conversions that are not directly connected to forest, as a state currently stated by the UDR, but we have leakages between different markets, between some consumers that are not countries that are not really implementing the same requirements. But this can also happen inside countries. And I think Brazil is a great, again, we're talking a lot about Brazil today, but it's again a great example when you analyze the beef supply chain. So as you introduced me before, we have an app in Brazil called Do Pasto ao Prato, which is in English is From Pasture to Plate, that show us the amount of deforestation, slavery, but also sanitary fines that those slaughterhouses are paying in case of disrespecting social and environmental regulations. And then we inform consumers about that. One of the things that we know from this app is you have a concentration of deforestation in the internal market. So then the clean version of this commodity is going to the external market. So I'm very concerned about how domestic markets will be absorbing those impacts in case that a more clean version of these commodities are going to be external. And of course, it's possible as we raise more awareness that those products end up in the hands of low-income regions. We constantly have this discussion about how much it costs to have a product with a very high quality, free of deforestation, free of slavery. And I think this is a forever question until we really kind of like dig deeper in this data to understand if really sustainability costs more is something that we don't know. It's very important for us to understand those inequalities that can be created by new legislations.
Wow, Vivian, it's so much information. It's so nice to hear all this from you. And I'm learning a lot. My brain is like, ah. And I think a lot of our listeners will also love all this information. And it's interesting also to see the word inequality that you brought during your explanation of the legislation. And as we can see now, about this kind of negative reactions and expectedly, right, from some countries, of course, that rely on the small farmers for some of the commodities and how they will suffer the impacts of the legislation. And talking about inequalities, as you all know, seen from above, has its core on principles of diversity, equality, inclusion, and justice. And bringing on this topic a little bit to the conversation, I'd like to hear a little bit more about you, Vivian. Like, who are you? And how was your pathway, you know, your professional pathway until today to bring all this knowledge and share with us? How was the challenges? We know you're also Brazilian, and we have spoke about that before, about the challenges as a scientist we have sometimes in our professional life. So it would be very interesting to hear a little bit from you as well.
Oh, that's great. It's probably easier to talk about the UGR than about that, but I'll do my best here to summarize. So I started this journey, I think it was, working more specifically on deforestation was in 2016, which was, if you remember, such a great year in Brazil, because we started to see the car registry, we started to understand a little bit more how this deforestation is happening, depending on the actors. So that was probably one of the greatest year one could have to really start digging deeper on deforestation. But then after that, I met Trace in 2017 in a presentation about the first release of the soy supply chain. And then, I fell in love. And then I was following Trace until 2019 when I moved to the Stockholm Environment Institute. So I was working in Brazil, in Brasilia, and then I moved to Sweden, Stockholm, to work in the initiative. And it's challenging. I mean, the whole adaptation, being a scientist, being a woman, but also being very young, presents us a lot of challenges. And I'm not even mentioning about the whole transition in a country that has a very different culture, very different weather. So the most important thing for me in terms of adaptation was to have a fantastic team, which is exactly what we have there, very supportive, that cares a lot about DEI. And then it makes this journey very easy for us when you have support people around you. So yeah, this is the type of thing that I try to do. I try to support others, seeing exactly the type of challenge that I had to face in my life.
Well, that's amazing, Vivi. Just make us admire you even more, right? Like all this super amazing knowledge that you share here with us, and also knowing that you are just like us, you know, like facing challenges as well, and having the support system is key for sure for many of us. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me today. It was such a great exchange. I feel like we can definitely spend more 2, 3, or 20 hours talking about this topic, but also I love the question about transitions from one country to the other, and the UGR is about that, right? We are all from producing countries that have the economy highly based in production of commodities, and being here in the side of the world and understanding a little bit this implementation, but also being able to put our perspectives, our views, our experience in this process is key. So thank you very much for giving me this place. It's just space to share my experiences.
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to us today. So this was such a fantastic interview with Dr. Vivian, and I got to learn so much about UDR and all coming challenges, but also opportunities, right? And this is how important remote sensing can be driving our supply chain to more sustainable workflow.
Yes, Flava, I completely agree. It's like, wow, Vivian is amazing. And I could learn so much from the conversation. And I can't wait to continue to learn more about UDR. And I hope all the listeners as well can learn more as me.
Yeah, and speaking of learning more, so for today's episode, we would like to share an article from the EU Hub entitled "The EU Regulation on Deforestation-Free Products and the Role of Earth Observation" by the author Mutu Kumar in April 2023. So in the article, Muthu summarizes the requirements of the UDR and also shows the opportunities and challenges of using Earth observation in this regulation. So be sure to check out Muthu Pulse and the larger EU Hub series when you get a chance. And thanks again, Jill Ansermans, for supporting this season. See you next time. Hey.